everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And as always, we're having a real talk with a real leader who I admire and I'm so grateful to have met recently. I'm going to pause here quickly to thank our founding partners. Without our founding partners, we wouldn't be going as we are. So thank you to CMD Agency, Felicia Hall and Associates, 6to8 Digital. Thank you so much for making everything possible for us. So today we're welcoming Lynn Altman. Lynn, thank you so much for joining us. Really excited to have you on the show today.
Thanks. I am super excited to be here.
Yeah. So folks, Lynn is a fearless leader, a brand builder, and an innovator. She's a president of Brand Now, an author, an endurance runner, so many things. Lynn, you have also been on radio interviews and TV interviews. So thank you so much again for coming on and spending your time with us. I'm just so glad. And folks, I always like to try to give you context for how I know the guests. So I'll do this really quickly. So I was also on a podcast recently by a wonderful woman named Erica Rooney, who Lynn and I both know. Lynn was on the show recently and Erica said, "You have got to know Lynn." So right away, of course, I was rabbit holing into Lynn. Who is this woman? And I quickly found out that we share a lot of contacts. One of my best friends who I've talked quite a bit about on the show and even have had her on the show, Pam Harris, another incredible person, Harry Bask, all kind of in this brand and marketing world. And of course, I was just so taken with the endurance part of what you do, endurance running with all of my endurance biking stuff. So with all that said, I would love to turn it over to you, Lynn. Welcome you again and ask you to share a bit about your company, Brand Now, and your role as president.
Great. Well, again, it's great to be here. And I am equal fans of Erica Rooney and Pam Harris and Harry Bask. And I'm seeing Pam next week for breakfast. Oh. So I'm super excited about that. Not being recorded on a podcast, just breakfast. So I am the president of Brand Now. We founded in 2007, but for about 12 years before that, I was a partner in another small agency called Viverito and Altman Brandmaker Express. So as you can see, I definitely shortened the name. And we focus on product and service innovation, DTC innovation, and branding, mostly for large CPG and financial companies. And then we also have a design arm, package design, brand design, logos. And it's great. It's super creative, super strategic, and really the perfect job for me. So nothing else I would rather do.
That's so great. That's so great. And I actually do know, because I listened to the podcast that you did with Erica, but I love your evolution story. And on the show and just the brand that I have, SLG Impact, really does focus on creating positive impact on brands and people, evolving brands and people. And so I loved when I heard about your evolution. And so, you know, there was a bit of the personal and professional evolution in there. So I'd love for you to share, you know, with the audience, what's that journey been like and how did you get to where you are today?
Sure. Well, you know, I had a very unusual journey, and I think it just was in the stars for me ever since I was a kid. I remember when I was young, you know, people, my dad or my parents would say, "Well, what do you want to be when you grow up?" And I was like, roller derby or advertising. Like, those were the only two things I could think of. And I remember he said to me, you know, there's some job out there for you. There's something out there. It might not exist yet, but you'll find it. And I really feel like that was really foretelling in terms of the path I took. So, you know, just as a little aside, like, I've never done anything quite the way everyone else does it. So I skipped first grade. So I was always younger than everyone. And then I left high school after junior year of high school. And so I ended up graduating college when I was 20. So I was already on a different path than most people. And I was in New York working, not in innovation and branding, but my roommate from college, her dad was a new products consultant. I didn't know what that was, but I thought maybe I could work for him, you know, because I was in publishing and that was awful. So I didn't want to do that anymore. And so I went to him and said, you know, what do you do? Is there work? I think you do creative things. And he said, well, I don't have anything for you, but there are two people who work for me who you should meet with. And he was the one who really got me started on networking. And every time you meet someone, ask for more people to talk with and meet, because eventually you'll find someone, you know, at some point in your networking journey. So the two people that he introduced me to, one wouldn't meet with me. And the other one was this man named Joe Viverito. And anyone who's worked with me long enough knows, is very familiar with who he is and us as a team. But he said, like, show me what you got. I didn't have anything. So I faked it till I made it. I created this portfolio using time-life photos and cutting out pictures of brands and kind of formulating my own ads to show him, because I thought he was a big ad guy. But as it turns out, he was really focused on new products. He had an idea for a process for innovation that I think his contemporaries didn't quite believe in, because it was very creatively driven. But me as a 24-year-old was like, that sounds good. I can try that. And so we started cold calling, and he had someone who was doing cold calls, and I was like, well, I'm home. I can do it. So I had quit my job by that point, and we were making cold calls, and one project finally landed, and our first client was Pepsi. Our second client was Merrill Lynch, and then it was Lipton. And then we're like, okay, I think we have something here. So he and I, you know, at that point had incorporated, and we were together as a partnership for 12 years. And that's really how my journey started. So for better or worse, I have no other professional experience besides being a brand builder and innovator.
That's so great. I love the way you tell that story. And actually, I love the fact that you gave a bit more than I heard previously. So, because I think that element of, and it's something that you had shared with me about your journey and really relying on instinct and, you know, tapping into that part of yourself that as a kid, that you're just so creative and not held back. And it sounds like that's been a guiding light to you, you know, all along. And so I'm actually curious, it's just coming up as we're talking about this, have you had moments in your journey where it's felt distant, that, you know what I mean? That element of creativeness and little kid instinct and fearlessness, have there been moments where it's almost like you've lost a bit of touch with it, and what's brought you back to it?
Well, it's funny because I would never describe myself as fearless, except that that is how I describe myself currently. But as a kid, that wasn't me. And so I think it came from continually daring myself to do things that scared me, to actually become more fearless and take more chances that I would feel like I am today, or that I do today. So it is a good question. Do I ever lose it and then come back to it? I think I do. I think, actually, I think that's where a lot of the physical activity comes in. It's a constant, constant challenge to do things that you're afraid of. Do them anyway. That's what I always tell my son. The first time he and I went to a water park, and there was a ride that was kind of nerve-wracking. And he said, I don't know if I'm brave enough. And I said, well, no, bravery is like being afraid of something and doing it anyway. Like, if you're not afraid of it, or he was saying he wished he were braver. And I said, well, no, if it doesn't scare you, then you're not being brave about it. But yeah, being brave is being afraid of something and doing it anyway. And so I try to make sure that there are parts of my life where I take on things that make me uncomfortable or afraid, and then I do them anyway to prove to myself that I can do them more than anyone else. And then recently, I think I was telling you, I did a race where there was something that really scared me, and I actually decided not to do it because I had weighed the risk and reward, and it felt too overwhelming. And I think that's an equally important lesson to learn in a world, especially as, you know, as business owners, as women, like, we're always trying to like prove our strength, prove our fearlessness, prove that we can take on anything. And I think every once in a while, it's okay to say, nope, I've reached my limit. I could use some help.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you said that, it reminded me of something that I've found in my own journey, especially in the last few years, is like when I had been laid off, in the beginning of COVID, I started SLG Impact and putting myself out there in different ways. And it was exactly what you just said about like proving myself to myself. And I agree with you about that. That's part of what fuels me to keep doing these big, crazy rides, you know, bike rides, is that element of like that challenge and overcoming and proving myself to myself. It's not like I'm trying to win a medal and be number one or something. I'm not that good. But I definitely identify with that. And I love the way you see that correlation between that, you know, what you do physically and, you know, how one fuels the other. So thank you so much for sharing that. And then I also appreciate you saying that about the awareness factor and folks who are, as you're listening to this, I think, you know, I'm sure that people can identify with that desire as a leader to continue to push yourself and I've got it and I can do everything. But I really honor that part of you, Lynn, that you knew when to back off. And that's hard.
Well, and I was in any challenge, I have a little bit of an arc. So, you know, if I'm climbing a mountain or doing a run, that I get to a point where I go, I don't think I can do this. And I give myself that the chance to exit, to say, okay, you don't have to do this. So if you want to turn around, it's totally fine. You don't have to do it. And then once I give myself that out, I usually say, okay, now I can do it. Like now I'm opting into it. It's not a have to. I'm electing. It's an elective conquering of my fear. And in this case, I had actually gone through that arc and I had tried to get out of it and I couldn't get out of it. There was no way. I didn't see a way around it. And so I had resigned myself to like, this is really going to be miserable and I'm really going to have to do this. And then the out was given to me and I almost didn't take it because I had already thought like, well, I've already been through that part of the arc, so yeah, I can do it now. But I actually, again, did take it. But that correlation between physical and mental and professional is something that I don't know if I've mentioned. I also studied karate for many years.
As you do.
As you do, yeah. And that was the master used to always say, it's not, we kind of joked about it, but he'd always say, it's not just kick and punch. Everything you do in karate, you can take out into the outside world, and discipline and how you talk to yourself and meditation and respect and awareness. And so I think with that guidance, I did take it to running and I did realize that, you know, I'm any of these physical activities, once you have that mindset that you're not just doing the physical activity, it really opens up a world of benefits and positivity.
Yeah, absolutely. And this whole part of this conversation has made me think about, like, a lot of times you hear people talking about like meeting ourselves with grace. And I think sometimes it's either really clear to people or like, what the hell does that even really mean? And so I think that, you know, what you just described to us about the experience you have where you give yourself that out, that opportunity to back off to, and you know, you're like, it's okay if I, and that I think again for the audience, like that's a really great living example of what it is to meet yourself with grace along the way. Like the way to find success, air quotes, is not always like keep pushing yourself forward and finish what you started. You know, again, I think that's why I said a minute ago, you know, I just really honor that part of you that was like, okay, I'm going to meet myself with grace in this moment, give myself the out. But then you even went further to be like, okay, and now I'm really going to be done here. So, you know, we have to do what we need at different times. And I think every time we face a challenge, whether it's physical, emotional, you know, in work, whatever that is, I think that's like a nice pattern to that you've shared with us that you give yourself, because it's, you know, a way to be nice to yourself in the process.
Mm-hmm. And I think I do it constantly. It's changing that should to could. Mm-hmm. You know, I should finish this race. I should run in the middle of the night. And you say like, okay, well, I don't have to, but now I can. I opt to, and I do that, you know, even getting up, you know, 6 or 7 mornings a week to like go run. It's not, I should run. It's okay. If I usually, even if I say, oh, it's okay, you can stay in bed this morning, I'm like, no, I'm going to go. I'm going to do it. I do it all the time. It's a good mental trick, but even with, you know, with work, with, yeah, you know, am I going to work this extra hour or am I not? Am I going to take the time off to, you know, take care of myself in a different way. It's really once you live outside of the should, it really does change all the things that you can and could do.
That's awesome. I love what you just said. Once you live outside of the should, it changes all the things that you can do.
That's awesome. It's a choice. Yeah, it becomes a choice.
Yeah. But it's also, as you've described it, it's a practice. And I think that's, again, something that I'm glad that we're sharing here. The audience can hear. Again, it's the example of, it's a practice. You said it's something that I do all the time with everything I'm doing. You talked about it in work. You talked about it in literally like, the crack of dawn in the morning when you decide if you're going to get out of bed or not. So, you know, the more we can use that as a practice, it's like the more we do it, the easier it becomes. Not that it's ever easy per se, but it just becomes part of your flow, part of your existence. So, you know, it takes some time, but, I just appreciate you sharing that. Cause again, it's like, sometimes people hear these things and it's like, what does that even mean? Or how do I do that? So thank you so much for that.
Yeah. It's like when people say, be a friend to yourself, and you're like, well, I get that, but how do I practice it? How do I implement it? Which is really hard to be a friend to yourself.
Oh, it's so hard. I know. I've been on this journey of like, the saying about, what you say to yourself, the words you use to yourself matter. The words you use with yourself matter as much as the words you're using out loud with other people, or probably even more so, it matters what you say to yourself. And so I've had to catch myself and really shift that, just that dialogue that I'll have with myself. And so it is really powerful.
I agree.
So I want to get back to brand now. I would love, so talk a bit about, because I also found this fascinating when we were talking the first time, when you talked about your guiding principles with the company and really how much you embrace the combination of effectiveness and efficiency and effectiveness. I'm not sure which order it is. It resonated with me so much because, I don't want to give it away, but we talked about it a little bit, and it sounds like the way you do it, it gets rid of some of that time wasting that goes on, which has always been challenging for me to kind of deal with. So please share with us about your guiding principles. What's your approach to how you operate the business?
Well, and it is, it's really efficiency above all, but not for the sake of efficiency. It's like, there's definitely a greater benefit. And if you can connect the dots between Brand Maker Express and Brand Now, like, it was always part of our core DNA that the best ideas, the best decisions, the best practices happen sooner rather than later. So yes, if you are contemplating the origins of the universe, feel free to take your time, ample time, ample dream space. But when you're working to be creative and when you're working to make smart decisions and not overthink, working efficiently is the key to working effectively. So when you set deadlines, and very realistic deadlines. So we have a 20-day, our flagship product is a 20-day innovation process that at the end of 20 days can deliver up to 20 finished test-ready concepts, which is a lot for any agency to do. But we do that because we know exactly how long each step takes. And then everything we do, it's constantly our priority, because it's not like, oh, this will take me this isn't due for 2 weeks. What we know is if something's not due for 2 weeks, you will wait until 2 days before it's done, maybe the day before it's done to do it. And then you're rushed. You've forgotten about what you were even doing in the first place. Like, what was exciting to me 2 weeks ago? I can't even remember like what I had for breakfast yesterday, which isn't true because I pretty much eat the same breakfast every day.
Same.
But
limit choices.
But yeah, there's two. But when you're being creative, the energy that you have for any project, any challenge is always highest at the beginning. And we want to try to maintain that. So it really avoids the overthinking, the mental fidgeting, we call it. So great example is like, you're going out to dinner, you're ready to go out the door, but you have 10 extra minutes left. And in that 10 minutes, if you're me and you change your shoes. Oh, is the shoes okay? Is the shirt okay? You start going through your closet, changing everything, and then you end up like back with what you already had or something probably worse. When you don't want to allow that time of project. You want to say, here's my instinct, here's my reason, and here are the ones that are really hitting me, and I'm going to take a chance on those ideas and on those choices. And we have enough of them that we're not narrowing down to one or two, but that we're moving forward in a very smart way. And for our clients, that also means with these tight timelines that they are always our priority, their project. We're never juggling so many things that we say like, oh, well, first we're going to do this. And then 2 weeks later, we'll get back to you. Like we really stay with the project. And so it just keeps our energy up. It keeps smart decisions being made. It avoids overthinking. And then it's also like people don't come and leave projects. Like it keeps it moving. And the quality of the work is so much better because of it.
Yeah.
So people always think like the less time you have, the less time you have, the worse. It feels like a shortcut, but really we always say like, thank God we didn't have too much time to do this, because then we just sat down and did it.
Yeah, it's so great. And I love the way you talk about it, and that it is part of the culture. It is just the way you operate. It's the structure, it's your approach, which again, I mentioned as I started talking about this whole thing, is like in my own journey, I would find myself, starting from the crack of dawn, just banging things out, being as efficiently as possible. People are like, how do you do all of the things? And I'm a bit of being a time bender kind of type, but there were times when I was in more of a, that office setting where I just was never the person that was going to mingle in the kitchen or, be by the air quotes water cooler or, chat. And it didn't mean that I wasn't valuing the people and not interacting, but it was just more of a cut right to it, because in my mind, I had that more of like, be efficient and effective. So when you said it, I was like, oh my gosh, it just resonated so much. So, I think it just says a lot about how you are leading the organization.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's actually one of the reasons that we transitioned to remote so quickly and easily, was because we didn't spend a lot of time. Actually, we started having weekly team meetings during the pandemic because we were like, well, we probably should talk to each other a little bit. But I hated like the meeting for the meeting's sake, or, we should get together. And so all of us kind of knew what we had to do and the timeframes that we had to do it. And so remotely, it's the same thing. We just, people talk about missing the water cooler experience. And for us, we never had it. We just sat down and did our work. And, of course, we were somewhat social, but we once shared an office with another agency for a short amount of time, and their culture, we had never, we had always had our own office, so we had never seen another culture. And they, all went out to lunch, and they would take the team to like go to the gym together. And then at 6 o'clock, they would say, you can have wine. They weren't allowed to have any of their company snacks during the day, but only after six, after they had been there. And then they would drink wine. And we were like, my team and I were like, we just want to come in and work and leave. Like we don't want to stay here any longer than we have to. This is our work. And then we have other things to do. So it was never, our culture has always been, come in, do your work and talk, if it's collaborative, you collaborate, but then you say like, okay, now I'm going to go do some, cause I think we'll do some alone work. And I think there is in any creative field or even corporate field, non-creative field, there are times to collaborate. And then there are certain things that are just better when you have some time in your own head to like, let me think this through and then let me come together with you. And that's a lot of our culture as well, which is let everyone think on their own before getting together so that everyone's coming to the table with something. And it's not just this open-ended, let's free think. And I've been in sessions very recently where it was just, I'm going to get a bunch of smart people together and we're going to talk about things, and it just doesn't work as much as come prepared, and then we'll talk about what you've prepared and collaborate and build on your idea.
Yeah. When you describe that scenario of just like a bunch of great people getting together and talking, I often feel it's like scattered marbles. Like, you know, it's like, I like the idea of all those people coming together, but again, be really focused about it, knock it out, that kind of thing. And I'm glad that we're talking about this, because I think that there has been so much conversation about in the last few years about remote, in office, culture, all of that. And I think that there's a large degree of people who think that like there's only one way to have culture. And culture means you're doing like you just described, you know, the ping pong, the go to the gym together, the happy hour. And it's like, you know, there's a place for different types of cultures. And, you know, I just really encourage people who are listening, whether you're leading a company or you're trying to figure out what company you want, you know, create and find the culture that really does work for you, because it's there. And even if you're in a culture that doesn't totally fit what is your ideal, I think we can still find a way to exist within it, and not have to feel like, I guess, bad or something if you're not the person who's always, you know, going to those group things and all of that. I had that hardest time for a long time feeling like someone's going to think that I'm doing something wrong because I'm not involved in those. I was just like, I just can't.
I have another trick for that, because there were different things I was a part of that would have these like mandatory meetings or these events. And I would always, but they were not really mandatory, but like you were expected to go, like an office gathering. And I would always say like, well, what if I really couldn't? Like, what if that was my mom's birthday? Okay. Or what if like I was sick that day and I just couldn't go? I wouldn't feel bad at all. And no one misses you. No one's like really taking attendance to see if you're there or not. And that's how I would give myself the pass. I'd be like, well, if I really couldn't go, I wouldn't feel bad about it. So I'm going to pretend I really, it's my mom's birthday, or, you know, I'm sick today.
Totally.
So give yourself the pass on that one.
Yeah, exactly. Give yourself a pass on that. I love what you said about like nobody really notices anyway, because my coach, actually, who's Pam's husband, Leslie Harris, he reminds me that like you actually usually think that people think about you more than they actually do. So if you don't show up to the thing, it's okay. You know,
no one. No one notices your absence. Very, very rarely. I always tell my son, no one's paying attention to you, which I always tell myself too. And it was actually my friend years ago who had that insight. She was sitting on the subway and she was like worried about what her hair looked like. And she was like, and then I got off the subway and realized no one cared what my hair looked like. Everyone was probably worried what their own hair looked like. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. Like we all only really just care about what other people think about us. Almost to like, you might notice someone, you know, my son always pushes back of like, well, but mom, you just noticed that person. I'm like, yeah, but it was like, didn't affect them. It was a blip. Their shoes were really bright. Like I had a thought, but now I've forgotten even that they existed 2 minutes ago. Yeah. So like, they're not really paying attention. No one ever said, Lynn, I haven't seen you at this event for the past 4 years that we've been. So they're happy that you're there. Don't miss you if you're not. With the culture thing though, I think is interesting. So like there are things as a leader that I don't do, even as a leader of like, you know, as a member of my household, I'm really bad at holidays. I don't dress up. Like I don't create fun thematic holiday things at home or at the office. And 1 year I had an office manager who said, hey, I like having that. And other people like having that. Can we have that? And I said, sure. Like if you want to bring it in, that's great. And we started getting, you know, and that's how I learned like, oh, holiday parties, even though I don't care that much about them, like other people do. So it is part of my job as a leader to support the culture that, and I have an agency small enough that I can do that, but really paying attention to parts of your culture that other people may want that you can provide pretty painlessly.
Right. But that tells me also something about, tells us, I think, something about like your leadership style, and that you do bring such awareness to it, where it was like, you were clearly that person, you have a culture in which your people feel they can come to you and have that kind of a discussion. And it's great that you were open to it and you're like, okay, well, this isn't just all about me. If we want to create it, sure. And, you know, you empower someone else to do that. And so, you know, I think that's also just something that I talk a lot about is that awareness factor. It's always great in leadership to continue to challenge ourselves to keep the volume high on our awareness, meter, so to say, which also I'm so glad we're talking about this because I really did want to ask you about your leadership style to the degree to which you can share, and not only your leadership style, but also like, what do you look for in the people that you are leading?
So my leadership style is, I would say, a work in progress and has always been so because I was leading from such a young age. I have to keep making mistakes and understanding what I do right or what I do incorrectly. I like to lead very compassionately. I'm an extremely empathetic person, an extremely extroverted person. And so I want to make sure that the people who work, with me are happy and feel valued. And sometimes I don't do it as actively as I could. My first business partner said, no one ever gets tired about hearing how great they are. So making sure that, I tell people how valued they are. I do try to lead by example. So if I want a work-life balance and I want to go see my son play soccer at 4, I put it on the calendar, like Dante soccer, so that they know I'm out doing something that's important to me that also can be important to them. So there's school pickups on the out of office calendar and doctor's appointments. I don't work on the weekends. I don't expect my employees to work on the weekends. And I also want to look to them. I'm always encouraging conversations and uncomfortable ones, even if they have something they want to talk to me about. I find it harder as a leader if there's something that one of my team members isn't doing, that to have those conversations and say, I need you to do this, or I'd like you to do this. But I think at the same time, I recently had a conversation with one of my team leaders. And I said, I'd like you to do this. I'd like you to step into this role. And here's how I'd like to organize it. But in the next breath, I say, like, but is that what you want to do? Like, do you have a problem with this? Because it should never, if someone doesn't want to, and you're making them, like, you're not going to get great results. They're not going to be happy. You risk losing them. So I do feel that I try to show compassion and understanding in leadership. It was funny. One year we were looking for a new office manager, and I'm so bad at like the interview process and hiring. Again, I've gotten better over the years. So one year my team and I tried to think of different interview questions, and not only would I interview the candidate, but they'd talk to a few other people in the office so that we could kind of talk about who we thought would fit better in our culture, or that it wouldn't just be my opinion. I was actually looking for some other insight and feedback. So we brainstormed lists of questions that would not like what your strengths or weaknesses. And one of them that my team came up with was, how do you deal with loosely defined directives? So it turns out as a leader, I give loosely defined directives, which is fine. Like, yeah, that's okay too. So sometimes it's nice to be a little loose, not so prescriptive. Other times I've learned prescriptive is better, but that's harder for me because to me, prescriptive feels like criticism. Like, I want you to do it exactly in this way, or don't do it this way. If someone said that to me, I think I would have my feelings hurt, or I'd say, don't tell me how to, I know how to do it. And I always have to remind myself that not everyone has that knee-jerk reaction of, I know how to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Even the way you're describing it, though, it does sound like you're giving structure and direction. And I love how in so many examples that you shared with us today, you talked about how you involve people, you invite them to share ideas, share in the process, take something to the next level, which I just think it's awesome as a leader. I think it's really something that is really helpful, because I think it's part of helping that person's growth. And I would imagine you probably have a bit of that when you're working with your clients and you're working with the brand. It's probably part of the process of your innovation is a bit of a collaborative nature. Is that right?
It very much is. And it's also really just listening and paying attention to what either a team member or a client wants. And that was one of the things very early on. I watched other agencies and creatives kind of roll their eyes at the client, or we had designers who were freelancing with us in the early days. And we would ask them to this is our idea. Can you make it look like this? And they would push back and say, well, why do you want to do it that way? And kind of drag their feet. And we'd say like, no, this is kind of our vision. Like, can you just try it? Can you be collaborative with it? And so we used to tell people when we hired them that they had to have the gene that they'd say, sure, no problem. Mm. And it wasn't about not having an opinion, but it was about being open on your very first instinct to what someone else was saying. And then you could go back and reflect and say, well, here's what you asked for. I think there might be a different way to do it, or I think there might be a better way. Let me show you what you asked for. Let me show you my way. Or, you know, if a client said your idea came out this way, but that's not really on brand, instead of fighting for it, you say, okay, let me hear it. Sure, no problem. Like, let me hear what you're saying. And then work with it and then make it better. Because, you know, as a leader, and I was thinking about this when you were talking, if you don't involve other people, it's very lonely and the ideas are really only limited to yours. And that's the same with a team and with a client. And it's the same approach with clients. You know, it's a mistake to think that in any relationship, you are the smartest person in the room and that your perspective is the best perspective. And when you do collaborate, the people I work with are incredibly smart, incredibly intuitive, experienced. They know their brands, they know their business, and they have information that I'm not privy to. And so I have to listen to what they're saying and take it as valid. And the same thing in my team. They have perspectives and experiences and ideas that are outside of me. And I think it only makes the work better, the team better, and the relationships better, the more open you are to what other people are bringing to the party. It also makes it a lot more enjoyable and a lot less lonely.
Yeah, absolutely. I was sitting here nodding the whole time you're talking. I'd be clapping if I could. I really agree. No, I so deeply appreciate and value everything that you just shared. I think that listening is so important. And how many times have I witnessed people being like, literally using that language, like, no, I have to push back. And it's like, ugh. No, there's a point of like that energy of pushing back only like pushes something, the energy and the people and the process further away. So I think the more that we can, just as you said, okay, no problem. How can I listen? And when you say listen, it's truly assess it and think about it. And is there a value there? And how can that impact what I was thinking? And so I just, again, like nodding, clapping. I'm so glad you shared, because I think so many people, you know, who are listening need to know that that's a perspective that is out there, especially as someone in a leadership position and at your level and what you're doing. Because I don't think it's always the norm. So thank you for sharing that with us. We have hit so many things today, and it's been an awesome conversation. And I would have you on for the rest of the day and hug you if I could. But just, I want to kind of wrap up with a couple of things. One is, you've told us so much about Brand Now, your process, and if people are hearing it and they're like, wow, I'm really intrigued, can you tell us a bit about if people are listening, like, who are you for as a brand? Who are you not for?
Mm-hmm. So Brand Now is for large CPG companies and financial services, or, you know, larger companies and brands, I'd say established companies and brands, who want to revive their business through innovation. So if there's a brand that's kind of aging out or not relevant and struggling, instead to remain relevant, and maybe not in the struggle, but but in the plateau, we are a perfect way to use different innovation and innovation pipeline and innovation strategy to help brands grow and stay relevant and move towards the future, which is really important for these big companies who have these great brands, this great equity. But as the disruptors come and the DTCs come, instead of playing their game, really playing that big brand game in a smart way. The other kind of group that we're for is the disruptors, but the disruptors who are on the trajectory, they have, you know, not the startups, but they have an established brand or product or place in the market. But now they're looking to say, what's next? How do we grow? How do we, you know, a lot of companies, I'd say small and mid-sized companies, may have had some innovation, but it's kind of like, oh, this is a good idea, which isn't necessarily an innovation strategy, you know, and it doesn't build a pipeline that will build a brand. So that's where we're able to take our big brand expertise and apply it to like some of the earlier stage companies. And in both cases, we always say that we think like a startup, but we act like a giant. And having those two, so for the giants, you know, helping them create and innovate with more agility, and then for the smaller brands, really bringing that expertise that the big brands have and helping them act more in the giant way.
Got it. Super clear. Thank you so much. And then the last thing I always like to do in these episodes is, because again, we hit so many different topics, and for the audience who's been on and listening, what are like one or two key takeaways that you'd like to make sure that you know, they have from your episode?
I would say I almost want to repeat, like, have grace with yourself, but really be kind to yourself. Understand that you're human and leaders are human. Leaders, being a leader doesn't mean being superhuman. And we make mistakes, and mistakes can be good, and vulnerability can be good. One of my favorite things, although I think my life partner might disagree, is one of my favorite things is admitting I'm wrong about something, because it releases the burden of having to dig in, having to push back, and saying, okay, yeah, there might be a better way. And if someone else can show you a better way to do something, what a gift that is to you.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for everything. Again, thank you for spending your time with us today. And I'm so grateful to be part of your orbit.
Likewise.
Yeah, thank you. So everybody have an awesome day. Appreciate you spending your time with us too. Bye.
Bye.